Looking for a new sports show?
So my wife and I go to the movies because you have to go opening weekend.
Yeah, I was with my boy, so he got us right up to the front of the line of this new club.
So I'm stuck watching my sister's dog again. He's throwing up all night.
2.5 games back in the standings, I feel like the Mets are one big bat away from competing. Imagine that. A sports show that's about sports. The Joe Fan Show. Are you fan enough?
Welcome to the Joe Fan Show with your host, Clayton Hamilton.
Greetings, sports fans. My name is Clayton Hamilton, and you're listening to the Joe Fan Show, coming to you live from fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada, the greatest city in the world, right here on the home of Vegas sports, NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. Let's check the headlines. Eric Gay of Canada has won the gold in Super G at the World Alpine Skiing Championships this morning in St. Moritz, Switzerland. At age 35, he became the oldest world champion in alpine racing history. Kjetil Jansrud of Norway took the silver, while fellow Canadian Manuel Osborne Paradis won the bronze. The world championship program continues on Friday with the downhill portion of the women's combined. NASCAR has announced a new policy that they will no longer allow teams to replace body panels or parts and pieces after a crash that could become dislodged and cause safety concerns. Under the new rule, a car will have only 5 minutes to make repairs, and those repairs must be made on pit road or they will not be allowed back on the track. An Olympic hurdler and gold medalist Don Harper Nelson has been suspended for 3 months after testing positive for a banned substance. Her suspension is retroactive to December 1st. Today on the program, we have Matt Reed and Stefan Filial, plus a special guest from the Rink Rats hockey program. Ryan, the hockey guy, and ballpark Frank Harnish going to join us. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. Are you fan enough?
So let's get loud and let's get proud. We got a game.
The Joe Fan Show is brought to you by the Las Vegas Pain Relief Center, with locations in both Henderson and on the West Side. Dr. John Petrick and his dedicated staff are committed to helping you lead a pain-free life. Visit them at lvprc.com and take the first step toward feeling great. Clayton Hamilton here in a fabulous Las Vegas, always feeling great in Oakland, California, my good buddy Matt Reed. Welcome, Matt.
Hey, Clayton. Good to be here, bud.
Great to talk to you. Did you have a good weekend?
Yeah, had a fantastic weekend. Fighting a little bit of a flu, but enjoyed watching the Super Bowl. Unfortunately, Atlanta, man, I feel bad for him, but what a choke job, huh?
I believe the phrase is "screwed the pooch."
in a big way. I mean, that game was basically all but theirs, but. Can't take anything away from Tom Brady, right?
Yeah, you certainly cannot. Tom and the boys getting another ring. Big parade on Monday. But what's really important, there are a couple of things that are important. First of all, Matt, I wanted to ask you, do you know what tomorrow is?
Thursday, all day.
It is Thursday all day, but it is also a February 9th, which means that tomorrow we are 1 year away from the opening ceremonies of Pyeongchang 2018, the Winter Olympics.
Oh, I know that gets you fired up.
It does. It gets me super fired up. And, you know, there's a pretty big story over the weekend beyond the Super Bowl. And do you know what that was?
No, what was it?
My guy, Jonas Lochner out of Germany, a guy sitting in second place in the World Cup standings in the four-man bobsled, DQ'd over the weekend for hot rails, Matt. Hot rails. He showed up. Put his bobsled on the track. They measured the temperature, as they do. They were too hot, and as we all know, hot rails melts the ice, reduces friction. It's the equivalent, the bobsled equivalent of a corked bat.
say it ain't so.
I can't believe it. And the best part, he gets no points, drops from a second down to seventh. Only one more race in the World Cup points. That coming after the World Championships in 2 weeks.
The best part is that you know that, and that's what differentiates Clayton Hamilton from any other sports guy out there.
That's because I get no sleep. It's these I just recovered from the Australian Open, and now I got 3 a.m. start times with the World Alpine Championships coming up from Switzerland. So running on fumes today. I don't know if you know this, but big announcement here at NBC Sports Radio, and that's that our friends over at the Rink Rats podcast have now gotten a full legit show, Matt. They are going to join the family, join the 2 o'clock hour every Thursday. Our good buddy is going to talk about hockey all the time, and they've been kind enough to come into the studio. So I'd like to introduce Ryan, the hockey guy, and Ballpark Frank, the co-host of the Rink Rats radio program. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, always a pleasure. Enjoy listening to your show. And, you know, now we get to after you're on Wednesday, we'll be on Thursday. So talking a little hockey.
Yeah, so it is all things hockey. It is hockey-centric. And you guys have got to be pretty excited that every day is another day closer to the Vegas Golden Knights.
You know, we try to approach the program from the aspect of all around, all encompassing. It's not going to be a Vegas Golden Knights specific show. Obviously, that's going to be the meat of what we talk about as we get closer to the start of the season. But we really want to get everyone acquainted with the league, with the NHL, with the players that are making noise, the teams that are doing really well. And knowing who's in the Pacific Division is going to be a huge, huge benefit for the people in Las Vegas to understand how the Golden Knights are going to stack up. So getting that insight, getting the insight of the Western Conference and all the other teams, it's really our goal to get everybody ready for 2017-18 Vegas Golden Knights hockey.
Yeah, and the other thing that we would like to do as well is just to expound on what Ryan was saying a little bit there. We're going to try to make a show, and we've been trying to do this with the podcast, that will be entertaining and also informative to the novice fan that's just getting in the hockey bandwagon, but also offer something to the diehard fans and that already do know the game, because there's a lot of people out here in Vegas that don't know it very well, but they're going to want to know it because of the Vegas Golden Knights. But a lot of people out here, when the Wrangler and the Thunders were here, that did come from other cities, like Ryan. He's a Kings fan. I'm a Blackhawk fan. I know you're a Blue Jacket fan, Clayton.
That's
so,
right. Go Blue Jackets.
So there are a lot, you know, there's diehard fans, but there's also a lot of people. I remember when the Thunder first came out here and they'd be killing a penalty and they'd throw it down the ice and the crowd would boo, and it's like, no, that's a good thing,
right?
Okay? But you know, so it we're trying to encompass everybody in there and make something for everyone. So, you know, they say you can't please everybody, but we're going to damn well try.
Yeah, and I would encourage anybody out there who is maybe a little bit new to hockey, remember that that Google is your friend and that the entire knowledge of the known world is available in your pocket. And if you just go and learn what offsides and icing are, it will make your life so much easier that you will start to understand all of the other things.
And to piggyback off of that, if you're somebody that has season tickets to the Golden Knights, or you are planning to be a hockey fan or to support the team, start now.
Mm-hmm.
Don't start in September, because then it's going to be too late. You're going to be at the game. You're not going to know what's going on. Put in the time now. You want to be a fan of this team? Start now.
I want to go out to Matt out in Oakland. Matt, now you're in an interesting situation because you live in the heart of San Jose Sharks country. You're an LA guy. You're sort of a Kings fan.
Good man.
What are you going to do Come November of next year, that now we have a team?
Yeah, well, obviously my King ties will never die, but it'll be fun to have a team, you know, locally in the city that people come out and support. And really, of all the sporting events, and I've been to all of them, and they all have their own special aspect, being live in a hockey game, pretty fun. Everyone in the crowd's having a good time. There's a lot of action, fast pace. So even if you really don't know what's going on, just being at the game, being around people that know what's going on, and just, you know, feeling that vibe, I think is one of the best things that people will experience. And once you've been to a game live, had a great time, you're going to keep coming back.
And again, I want to throw this in too. No disrespect whatsoever to the Wranglers or the Thunder when they were out here, But if that's what you think professional hockey is, when you ramp it up to the NHL level, the players are so much faster, they're bigger, they're stronger, they shoot the puck so much harder, the skill level is so much more on tip-ins and just in front of the goal. They beat the hell out of each other. They're blocking shots all over the place. To me, there is nothing like a live NHL hockey game. I love football. I love basketball. I love all the sports out there. But hockey live in the arena is just a whole different excitement level. And then you go to the playoffs and you go, how much more ramped up can it be? And then you see how much more it gets in that even. I hope the Golden Knights are successful, but a couple years down the road when they might be a playoff contender as well, wow, the excitement's going to be even that much more ramped up.
Couple years down the road, if they get Claude Julien, they'll be a playoff contender year one.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Claude Julien, or Claude, as they say, that the folks in Boston sort of mixed reviews. There are people that have been trying to run him out of town for a long time. We don't have a coach yet for the Vegas Golden Knights, and the list of guys that keep getting fired this year is growing. When you look at the candidates that are out there, when you look at what this team is going to have to go through, do you want an ex-coach that's just coming off being the head man, or do you want a young and up-and-comer? What do you think, and then what do you think the direction of the team will be?
So George McPhee has said multiple times that he wants this team to be fast-paced, high-octane, in the same vein of a Pittsburgh Penguins-type team. The problem with that is the reality of the situation is you are not going to get those type of players year one. It's an expansion draft. And while the rules of this expansion draft are very, very beneficial to Vegas, you are not going to get top tier first line centers and first line right wings and left wings. You're not going to get that. So it makes a lot of sense year one, year three, year five even, to have a coach that's very defensively responsible. And that's what Claude Julien is. He's a very defensive, systems-oriented coach. And with an expansion team, that's going to make them infinitely more competitive. The time right now is for a Claude Julien here in Vegas. The time for a younger guy to inject some of that speed and some of that ferocity that the Penguins play with is probably 8 to 10 years down the line when you've got some draft picks, when you've brought in some homegrown talent, and you are getting top-tier, high-quality first-line players.
Ryan and I were talking about this the other day, and I agree with most of what he said there. Hopefully it won't take 8 to 10 years down the line. But Claude Julien, I think he is a good coach. But if McPhee does what he says he's going to do and what Foley said they're going to do, then that would be a clash. So I don't know if that's a good mix. If they want to just sell tickets and make an exciting, high-octane like the Pittsburgh Penguins, when you're watching these games, if you're jumping on, you're going to start watching NBC Sports or the NHL Network. Look at the third and fourth lines, because that's what the Las Vegas Golden Knights are going to be made up of. It's not going to be the stars of the league. Those are the players that are going to be available. I believe each team has to put up three forwards, two defensemen, and one goalie. That's what they have to pick from. So it's not like they get the whole pick of the crop from every team out there. So I don't know if Julien fits in. Now, if they want to win, I think they go with a Julien, and they try to make that slow. Get a goalie, look on the defensive, and be that counterpuncher. But it might not be exciting. Mm-hmm. If you're willing to say we're not going to win, but we're going to lose games 8-5, and that's going to get people in the seats, it might. But if you're losing all the time, it doesn't necessarily put people in the seats. So I like the Julien choice. I don't know if he's a good mix. And a lot of people think that before he became available, that they've already had their eye on whoever they're going to take. So they might have already had the coach picked in the back of their mind who might have already been available before Claude Julien got let go by Boston. If that's the case, then it's a moot point anyway.
I mean, at the end of the day, you can get any coach in there and lose 8-5. Right. You know what I mean? What's the point in that? There's no point in that. Hockey is always going to be an exciting game just because it's so fast. So even when you're talking about defensive systems, we're not talking about the New Jersey Devils and the neutral zone lock. We're talking about smart defensive play. There's a difference in there. If it translates to wins means more butts in the seat. More butts in the seat means more kids going out and playing hockey. It's going to grow the game here. Julien is the right pick for right now.
Mm-hmm.
Unless We can poach somebody from the Chicago Blackhawks.
No, no, no.
I think we should. I absolutely think we should.
The Blackhawks have enough trouble right now. We have salary cap and everything else. Leave the Hawks alone. Get a guy available. Quit stealing from my team, man.
Kevin Dineen. Yeah. Or the guy that I like, Jack Capuano, just because how great is it would be to have Jack Capuano walking down the strip with a couple of showgirls on his arm, having steaks at Oscars. Like, he's old school Las Vegas, which would be fantastic. Clayton Hamilton here with Matt Reed in Oakland, California. The Rink Rats radio program with Ryan the Hockey Guy and Ballpark Frank debuting tomorrow. Is that correct, fellas?
Yep, tomorrow from 2 to 3. We will be on right before the T.C. Martin Show, as you are here on NBC Sports 920 The Game. Lots of hockey talk, and tomorrow we'll be joined by our good friend Brian Blessing, one of the most knowledgeable people in Las Vegas when it comes to hockey. Used to do some play-by-play and some stuff with the Buffalo Sabres, so curious to see what he has in it. And we're just going to take this thing, hopefully run with it, and entertain people, maybe inform a little bit, and apparently we will disagree on things as well.
It looks
because
that
Ryan's
way.
Wrong a lot.
I'm never wrong at all. Let's talk about the St. Louis Blues, hey?
Yeah. Well, hey, great having you guys here. Ballpark Frank going to stick around with us for the rest of the hour. Remember, guys, to get all your hockey knowledge, Rink Rats radio program, 2 to 3 p.m. NBC Sports Radio every Thursday. Best part about hockey, Frank, they give you a stick and they let you hit people.
And you only get 2 minutes if you do, so it's not a big deal.
Exactly. You're listening to the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio 920, The Game. The Joe Fan Scoreboard is brought to you by Kazoom Adventures. For outdoor hikes that can win you money, visit radio.gokazoom.com for exclusive picture and video clues. Get outdoors, find flags, play Kazoom, the hottest new game in Vegas. radio.gokazoom.com. Two top 10 teams are in action tonight, starting at 4 p.m. when number 6 Baylor heads to Oklahoma State. And at 8 p.m., Stanford is in Tucson to play number 9 Arizona. Also at 8 o'clock, your UNLV Runnin' Rebels are up in Reno to face Nevada. In the NBA, two games get going at 4 o'clock as Cleveland heads to Indianapolis to play the Pacers. And LaMarcus Aldridge and the Spurs will try to get back in the win column as they head to Philly to meet Dario Saric and the Sixers. And at 4:30, there are three games on the docket: Nuggets at Hawks, Lakers at Pistons, and Wizards at Nets. At 5, there are 5 games. Miami is in Milwaukee, Utah is at New Orleans, Phoenix is at Memphis, Toronto is at Minnesota, and Blake Griffin and the Clippers head to Madison Square Garden to play Carmelo Anthony and the Knicks. And rounding out the day, there are 2 games at 7:30, a Bulls at the Warriors, and Isaiah Thomas and the Red Hot Celtics are in Sactown to play the Sacramento Kings, who will be without a Boogie Cousins this evening as he serves his 1-game suspension for accumulation of technical fouls. And just 1 game in the NHL this evening, Patrick Kane and the Blackhawks will be in Minnesota to take aim at Devin Dubnyk and the Wild. Puck drops in that one at 5 o'clock, and that is a look at your Joe Fan scoreboard. Clayton Hamilton here in Las Vegas, out in Oakland, California. Matt Reed joining us, sticking around, co-host of the Rink Rats radio program, Ballpark Frank. Ballpark, a big game for your Hawks this evening, taking on the Wild, who looked pretty good last night in a win over Winnipeg.
Well, you know, I was saying when I was doing the podcast with Ryan a while back, even when the Hawks were technically in first place point-wise, they had like 5 games at hand. The Wild are the best team right now in that division, and they have been for a good part of the year. And Devin Dubnyk might be the best goalie in the NHL right now. And people are thinking right now, if they know hockey, what are you talking about? Carey Price is the best goalie. Well, Carey Price has gone down a level a little bit. He's kind of come down to reality. Dubnyk's playing out of his mind, and he has been all season long. They're a hard-hitting team. They can score. And the scary thing about them, you liked the World Cup. I liked it. Apparently not a ton of people did because the ratings weren't that good. But 3 captains from 3 of those World Cup teams are in the Wild minor league system that aren't even in the NHL right now. Yeah. As good as they are right now, they're going to get even better. This team scares the hell out of me. I hope the Hawks can find a way to be competitive and maybe win one more cup. But Minnesota is coming. They're coming hard. Oh, by the way, they have Bruce Boudreau on the bench, who's very upset that he got fired from Anaheim last year. He's got something to prove. Dubnyk's got something to prove. This team is scary. Maybe in the playoffs it'll be a different scenario, but they are the team that scares me in the West right now.
You know, there's another little team out there with something to prove, Matt, and you alluded to them earlier, and that is the Atlanta Falcons.
who made some changes yesterday. And I think that they sort of surprised everybody. In case you missed it, Kyle Shanahan, who's their offensive coordinator, headed to San Francisco to be the head man of the 49ers. They reached out, Matt, and brought in, of all people, Steve Sarkisian, the new offensive coordinator at Alabama, gets one game in the national championship, loses it, jumps ship, and goes to the Falcons. Did this come out of nowhere for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it came out of nowhere for a lot of people. Well, whatever Sarkisian did, boy, as down as people were on him, he went from being an analyst to being the offensive coordinator in the national championship game, now to being the offensive coordinator to a team that went to the Super Bowl. So he's made a pretty remarkable run in the last year, considering where he was before that. But yeah, I think it surprised a lot of people. I wouldn't say Nick Saban probably didn't know about it. I think he probably might have had an idea about it, but to see him jump to the NFL like that was definitely surprising.
And it sort of brings up all sorts of questions about where the Falcons are going to go, Frank. They got rid of a couple of their coaches on the defensive side. Sarkisian walks into a pretty ready-made situation. They were second in total offense, third in passing yards, fifth in rushing. Sarkisian seems to like the same style of offense as Shanahan. But is this odd for Sarkisian, who was a guy that was sort of getting a second chance in Alabama, trying to rebuild his reputation after all that went wrong in USC, and now he jumps to a job that gets replaced in the middle of the season if you don't win games?
Well, he does, but he's also, you got to strike when the iron is hot. If you have a Super Bowl contending team that should have won the Super Bowl, if you're Sarkisian right now, the main thing you have to do is, if you're up 25 points, run the damn ball.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, call the correct plays, use the clock, run the ball, do what's smart. Hopefully he can do that. And from everything that I've heard, although Nick Saban is a great coach, he's not the easiest coach to work with. So a lot of people use Alabama as kind of a stepping stone, going, well, I know I'm going to be successful, so I'll come here. But the first time that a good offer comes around, I'm getting the hell out of there, because Nick Saban is not the easiest man supposedly to work with. Yeah, so I don't blame Sarkisian at all, but I'm just wondering if it's a knee-jerk reaction with Atlanta getting rid of everybody. Like you said, okay, Sarkisian, they had to get an offensive guy in there, but then the defense too. I mean, it's like you just made it to the Super Bowl and everybody's abandoning ship. Mm-hmm. I just wonder if they're ever going to bounce back from that devastating Super Bowl loss.
Yeah, what is the philosophy with that, Matt? It's almost like they decided that we're gonna take the onus and put it on these coaches. And it goes back, it was funny, it goes back to what we were talking about last week about the GOAT, right? And that the GOAT makes you lose, and all of the sins of the Falcons have been put on to their defensive coaching staff, and it feels like if they just get rid of them, that all the bad juju goes away. Is that correct?
No, the furthest thing from the truth. It reeks of something that probably had been brewing for a little while, because I even mentioned during the Super Bowl, I'm like, wow, Atlanta's defense has actually stepped up over the last few weeks. I mean, if you look what they did to Green Bay, they shut down Green Bay. And for three quarters, they were basically shutting down New England as well. So the fact that they, you know, we're talking 2 days later, they're already dumping the defensive coordinator, getting rid of Cox. Like, something had to be brewing there for that to happen.
You know, one thing, too, that I haven't heard a lot of people bring up is – everybody's talking about how tired the Atlanta defense was, and they certainly were. You could see it on their faces. You could see them with their hands on their knees. They were that tired after the longest halftime that they're ever going to have in their history.
Right.
If they couldn't recharge their battery and have the energy back and then, how tired would they have been in a regular 35-minute halftime or something like that? They had over an hour and were still dog tired. As soon as that coin flipped happened, you knew the game was over.
Yeah, the writing was certainly on the wall. I want to go back to something you had said, Frank, about Nick Saban being hard to deal with and contend with. And, Matt, I will ask this of you. When you look at Lane Kiffin, certainly an alpha personality, Nick Saban, obviously an alpha, Steve Sarkisian's an alpha, the biggest story, everybody's slapping this story on the front page, that Chip Kelly is the guy that's going to come in and run the offense. He's another super ego alpha guy. If it didn't work out with Kiffin and it didn't work out with Sarkisian, how in the world would it ever work out with Chip Kelly?
Yeah, it wouldn't. And yeah, I mean, if we're talking the alphas of the alpha, I think Nick Saban's at the top of the list. So even though these guys do have a big personality, I think he's able to kind of put them in their place if they have to be. Look, Chip Kelly, I mean, you can't get any lower than you are now. So if he even gets a chance to be an offensive coordinator at Alabama, I think he has to jump at it, because as we've seen with Lane Kiffin and now with Sarkisian, is that offensive coordinator at Alabama for a year can actually propel you to bigger and better. So this is not a bad spot for Chip Kelly to jump back in. I think he would have to put his ego in check. And I mean, look, they returned, you know, one of the best offenses in football this year anyway. And you know they're always loading talent. So it's not really, I mean, whoever ends up getting the job, they're getting a pretty sweet situation.
And beyond Chip Kelly, Frank, Mark Helfrich been mentioned, George Godsey, former offensive coordinator of the Texans. If you're Nick Saban, what kind of person do you want to bring in? Do you want to bring in another alpha, or do you want to bring in a puppet?
Well, if I'm Nick Saban, I want to bring in an alpha as somebody who's got belief in what they do. But I believe Nick Saban wants to bring in somebody that's going to do what Nick Saban says. That's why I don't think Chip Kelly's a fit at all. He's not going to go someplace where he can't implement his system. And Nick Saban, it's a dictatorship. Mm-hmm. He's the king. You're doing it my way, or you're getting the hell out of here. So I would think that he's looking for somebody, maybe with some name recognition, but somebody who's going to go right behind him in line. If he wants to throw him under the bus, he can, but Nick Saban's going to be the man in charge. You better believe that, because that's what happens in Alabama, and that's not changing anytime soon.
No, and he'll be the guy in charge, but I think when it comes to the offense, I think he's a little more hands-off. I think, obviously, Saban is a defensive guy, and with the offense, I think he'll instill a little more trust in whoever the coordinator is. You're right, obviously, Saban's the top dog in that situation, and Chip Kelly will end up bowing down at some point, but... But I think he would have his reign to bring in a system that works for him. I don't know if it would be completely the same system they're running in Oregon or he was trying to run in the NFL. But I think he could bring in kind of some tweaks, especially with a mobile quarterback that can make plays with his arms and his feet. I think, you know, that's what Chip Kelly thrives with.
All I know, Matt, is Nick Saban wears a visor. Lane Kiffin wore a visor. Steve Sarkisian wore a visor. Chip Kelly, he also wears a visor, Matt.
The visors are coming back.
I know, right? What is it about? You know, you have to be an alpha if you're going to wear a visor.
I did notice one of the names on your thing, and I would not touch anybody who had anything to do with the Baylor program.
Oh, yeah, Art Briles. Yes, Art Briles is out there. Huh? Now, that is the alpha of all alpha moves, if you're Nick Saban, correct? Bringing in Art Briles and taking on... But, yeah, I think Art Briles is... is super done.
What was going on down there for 5 years? Does anyone know?
No, and I don't know that we will ever really know the truth until maybe 15 years from now when 30 for 30 comes out about what went wrong at Baylor. But oh boy, is it a mess? And we will leave that for another day. When we come back, Stephon Filion going to join us. I talk a little NBA basketball. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. The Joe Fan Show is brought to you by the Las Vegas Pain Relief Center, with locations in both Henderson and on the West Side. Dr. John Patrick and his dedicated staff are committed to helping you lead a pain-free life. Visit them at lvprc.com and take the first step toward feeling great. Clayton Hamilton here in Las Vegas. Matt Reed out in Oakland, California, joining us in studio, host of the Rink Rats radio program, which you can catch every Thursday from 2 to 3 right here on NBC Sports Radio. Ballpark Frank Harnish. And joining us, our basketball insider, Stephon Filion. Welcome, Stephon.
Hey, hey, hey. Glad to be back.
Yeah, good to talk to you. A lot of games happening over the weekend, ramping up towards All-Star festivities, which are going to get here before you know it. We got a little preview of a team that our good buddy Matt Reed out in Oakland was all over last week. Last week, Matt, you had said, hey, watch out for those Washington Wizards. They're playing pretty good ball. They might find themselves in a playoff series with the Cavaliers. TNT heard you. They flexed out of their Knicks-Lakers game in order to show a nationally televised Wizards game. It lived up to all the billing.
Yeah, it did not disappoint at all. And you know, if we got a playoff series like that, we'd be in for a treat. I mean, that's That's like a final series right there. If you catch that in round two, I mean, what more could you ask for?
Yeah, that's pretty close back to when Gilbert Arenas was going at LeBron when he was in Cleveland the first time.
Mm-hmm. This was pre-gun Gilbert Arenas.
This is pre-gun Gilbert. And
so you're saying the only shooting he used to do was on the court?
Right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He used to shoot the lights out. But, yeah, man, that competitive spirit. Hopefully the East can get back to how it used to be when Paul Pierce was with the Celtics and all those guys had serious competition. It was during Derrick Rose's MVP year.
Mm-hmm.
That whole time, it was kind of a toss-up, but, I mean – LeBron was losing.
Right.
That's how you know how good it was
right.
in the East.
When you said how good it was in the East, they would go back. I started thinking about Jordan and Bird and Isaiah Thomas and Dominique Wilkins and Moses Malone.
Well, this was like the next wave.
The next
though.
Wave.
Like, you know, of the modern the era, the new age guys. This is even after Kobe. Kobe had a long prime in my eyes, but. This was a time when you didn't really know who was coming out of the East.
Correct. And Matt, let's look a little bit at what we may have learned or not learned on Monday night with the Wizards. They did end up losing that game 140-135 in overtime in a game that LeBron James fouled out in. We're going to see both of those teams again tonight. Most concerning maybe is the Wizards. The Wizards go to Brooklyn to a Nets team that is struggling to try and find that 10th win this season. They only have 9. This is one of those games where if you're Washington, you can either show up and blow them out of the gym like you're supposed to, or you can allow Cleveland to beat you for a second night and lose to the Nets. What Wizards team shows up tonight?
I think the Wizards team that blows them out shows up tonight. I mean, the fun part is when you see New Jersey on your on the schedule, you know that's where you pad some stats.
Especially since they moved to Brooklyn.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah, exactly. With New Jersey on the schedule, would be even better.
But yeah.
With the Nets on the schedule, we're worst defensive team in the NBA, so everyone goes out and gets theirs tonight. This Washington team, I think if we're talking about the team 2 months ago that was struggling, that's a team that comes out and has a letdown, but I think John Wall is really taking this team by the reins, and he hasn't let them come out tonight and get beat. I think they win easy.
Well, absolutely. Even John Wall said himself in how they have the during-game interviews. He's come out and said, I've learned to communicate with my team, because before, I don't think he knew how to be a leader, even though he has the skills and the potential to be that. And now he's reaching that potential and really leading this team and going along with Bradley Beal, accepting his role and what he can do for this team, and really taking a strong push into the latter part of the season, and just competitively, he's looking more focused, and I think that's very important for this team to go forward. And if they were to make a move, it would attract somebody that's very. That would help them out a lot in the playoffs.
When you look at the moves, and we've got the February 23rd deadline coming rapidly upon us, Matt, they're going to get Ian Mahimi back. He should play tonight. They said it's going to be sort of a game-time decision, but everybody expects that he might play maybe 6 to 9 minutes or so this evening. Is getting him back, he's only played one game all year, is that the move they need, or do they need another move on top of that?
I mean, really, if they want to compete for a chance to get out of the East, they got to go get one more guy that gives them something down low. Right now, Mahimi, I think he had good minutes when he was with Indiana, but I don't know how proven he is. I mean, maybe he will be the backup kind of guy, and maybe he has a guy like Biombo. Remember the energy that he gave Toronto last year in the playoffs. So if Mahimi does come in with the same energy and that defensive presence, maybe it does add what they need. But I'd love to see him just go out and get a proven veteran big guy. I mean, I know I say Millsap, and that's a big ask to find a guy like that. But But if they had a guy like that down low, because Markieff Morris is playing really well, if they had one more guy like that, I think they would be tough.
They're not going to get anybody that's going to put them over the hump like that, because they would have to give too much to get that. And I think that completely disrupts the chemistry. Ian Mahimi will help. There's no telling how much. I mean, because like Matt said, his production with those other teams showed. But with him being out so long, I don't know how long it's going to be before he gets calibrated with this team. And I mean, that's pretty much it. They get the playoffs. They'll be very interesting in the playoffs. There's no telling what they do once they get there. But as far as getting somebody that can help, like, they would have to get a DeMarcus Cousins.
Right.
They would have to get a DeMarcus Cousins to make them championship contenders.
Yeah, Wizards, 135 points the other night. 119 of them came from their starters, including 41 from Bradley Beal. They are 29th, Frank, in bench scoring, and I think it kind of goes to what Stephon's saying. There's not a lot of guys out there maybe that you can move. Maybe Chandler out in Arizona. What do you see? Can they blow up the Bulls? Can they blow up your Bulls? Frank,
well, somebody needs to blow up the Bulls because they made a lot of bad choices.
Take somebody, Snell, anybody.
They could take somebody, but I don't know how much they'd fit in or how much it'd actually help what Washington is trying to do. Washington right now is maybe the second best team in the East, but they're still probably a far second best. Even though LeBron's crying that he doesn't have enough help and he wants more money and he wants Gilbert to go out and we have another roster spot available. They're already playing the salary tax and everything. But the bottom line right now, everybody's still playing to be that runner-up to Cleveland unless everything just falls absolutely right or Cleveland gets some kind of devastating injury. I don't know if Cleveland likes the three-ring circus aspect, if they just like to complain all the time. Maybe they thrive on the turmoil of it, but they're clearly the best team in the East. Washington's improved, and they're a decent team, but they're still not Cleveland, and they're sure as hell not Golden State in the West or something. Well, so,
yeah, Cleveland's just deep. They're crazy deep, and it's funny because LeBron has made a complete 180 on his claim for wanting that other playmaker. Now he's saying what he should have been saying from the get-go. We just need to play better because you've got top players on your team, and you're extremely deep. And the Wizards, as good as they're playing, they just don't have that right now. And maybe it's – who knows? Maybe it's the fault of the season going into NBA All-Star weekend and everything in the second half of the season may take another turn. They might get too comfortable. So only time will tell. They are not deep enough, as I said. And, I mean, they've got guys during the offseason, Andrew Nicholson, Marcus Thornton. They've been effective in other games, and they got a DNP that game. So it's evident that they're top-heavy, and they're going to need a bench in the playoffs because benches win you series in the playoffs. They may not win you a game, but they will win you a series,
especially in a deep series.
Exactly.
They are they're 22-7 at home. They've won 8 of their last 10, Matt, and for all accounts and purposes, they played fantastic on Monday, and it still wasn't enough. Even with Cleveland was an absolute mess. They were a train wreck on defense. Their switches were off. Their transition defense looked like it's the 30th ranked transition defense in the NBA, which it is, and it looked like it. And still, LeBron James fouls out. Still not enough for Washington.
Yeah, but it still took a 75-foot dime from Kevin Love and a bank from LeBron to even get it to overtime. So, yeah, kind of a freak play there. But I'll tell you, I mean, Kyrie Irving took over in overtime, and that's the same thing he did last year in the finals when he took over those games against the Warriors. And that's really the guy for Cleveland. You know, he keeps asking for playmakers. Kyrie's the ultimate playmaker, and they keep the ball in his hands more. You know, we see with LeBron out of the game, Kyrie had the ball in his hands, had the freedom, and he was the one making plays. So you know, they're going to be fine for Washington. They're going to be fine too. A couple names I was thinking about throwing out there: Wilson Chandler. Where do you think Wilson Chandler, especially as a bench scorer, would fit into this team? Because he's not happy in Denver, and you know, he's looking out. That might be a bad or might be a good fit in Washington. And a guy like Terrence Jones right now with New Orleans. I know New Orleans is still hanging on, but he's only $1 million salary. I mean, he's a guy that's easy to go out and get.
Well, who knows? He could be going elsewhere. He could be in Philadelphia by the end of the week.
Okafor's in the news every day, Stephon, and New Orleans is in the news every day. And if you're New Orleans, is every single person on the block except for Anthony Davis?
Yes. Yes, I mean, it's just that simple. Anthony Davis, and I think they have to keep Drew Holiday because of what he brings to that team, and he really is the captain of running that offense and making sure Anthony Davis gets his touches in his spots, and the fact that he can shoot and he plays decent defense as well is very important. So I don't think he goes anywhere, but I think everybody else is pretty much up for grabs. They just picked up Monte Yunus. Mm-hmm. He's not going anywhere. He can't go anywhere. But I think he tries to fill that void of Ryan Anderson, which they've been looking for all season. And they've just been dealing with too many injuries and having guys come back and having guys go out. I mean, how can you build any kind of consistency that way? Alvin Gentry has taken a tough task. I don't think he really signed up for this, and who knows how long he's going to be there.
Yeah, Alvin Gentry certainly walked into a situation where he thought, well, hey, this is a team that's hovering around, 7, 8, 9, probably in the playoffs 2 out of every 3 years. We can make that jump from the bottom of the table maybe to the middle, Matt, and it hasn't worked out because of all of the injuries, but I can't help but think that New Orleans doesn't necessarily know what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you have 10 or 11 or 12 guys that are available, that signals to me just completely start over. Like, why are you trying to put lipstick on the pig?
Yeah, it's kind of a hodgepodge group that they put together too, and there probably wasn't a whole lot of rhyme or reason to it. I mean, just look at a guy like Tyreek Evans. I mean, we know how talented a guy like Tyreek Evans is. He just hasn't stayed healthy the last 3 years, and I think that's one of those situations that kills him, because anytime you think he's going to come back and play significant minutes, he gets hurt. Same thing, Drew Holiday, he seems to get banged up a lot. And of all the people, you don't know Anthony Davis day in and day out if he's even going to finish a game. I've never seen someone get hurt in game more than Anthony Davis. So, yeah, they're on the fringe. This isn't a team that's ever going to win a championship, but they have some pretty good pieces. It just looks like, yeah, you need just a makeover and a total reconstruction of building around Davis and seeing what you could do there. I mean, Buddy Hield, if he improves, he could be a good guy as a shooting guard. But yeah, they're going to have to do something different, and this might be the year we see him blow it up.
You know, I hear all you guys talking, and you're saying about how it's, you know, the GMs are trying to build a team, and maybe they don't know exactly what they're doing or where they're trying to go. Is that just because in this era of basketball, it's much harder than it used to be? Because you have players talking to each other in the offseason. They're making their own teams. They're going where they want to. There's hard salary caps and things, unless you want to pay the luxury tax and everything. Is it harder for a GM to do that now because guys maybe sign a shorter contract? Maybe they want to go someplace else and join a buddy of theirs or something. It seems like a different era of basketball.
It is, but at the same time, I mean, I think back to teams like the Pistons when they had Rip Hamilton and guys and Tayshaun Prince and Ben Wallace and Rasheed Wallace and just role players that knew their role and knew how to get it done. You can put a team, you can put any team together. It's just like chemistry, and that's why I love Dr. Buss so much, because he made sure his team was put together like a chemistry project, because he made sure that they worked together. And when you've got a guy like Anthony Davis who has so many different abilities, you can put players around him who can just do that one thing and make sure to grow them and so that they play on both ends of the floor to make it work. The thing about them is
you don't know where they're going. I mean, the injuries have something to do with it, but at the same time, you lose guys like Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson, guys that put up numbers. Ryan Anderson is proven. He's been to the finals when he was with the Magic. Eric Gordon, he comes out in Houston. We thought he was done, but look at him. He's up for Sixth Man of the Year this year. You've got to be able to put guys in, on the court that know how to play together and build a system that will work. You have to be flexible and communicate. And it's, I mean, I went through this a few years ago with the Lakers. Although they had bad coaching, but there was no growth because of injuries. And as far as GMs, maybe they blew it up last year. Who's to tell that? Because of the guys that they lost. And I think they're just in it sucks because they got to take a turn and turn into a rebuilding stage. And, I mean, that's just where I think they're headed right now.
Yeah, and also to try and do that in that the difficult West, you know, it sometimes might be a little bit easier if they were the Bucks, like if they could just swap divisions with the Bucks.
What is up with them?
Maybe the Pelicans would have a better chance, or maybe if they just were the Bulls and they could just blow themselves up.
Or maybe if they were Philadelphia and they just tanked for like 5 years to try to build a team.
Yeah, there's always that.
They're almost to the promised land right now. They're looking really good.
It's not called tanking, Frank. It's called trusting the process.
Yes.
That is...
A.K.A. tanking.
Trust the process. This is the Joe Fan Show here on NBC Sports Radio, 920 The Game, Q&A when we get back.
Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Joe Fan Show and on the web at joefanshow.com.
The Las Vegas Pain Relief Center in Henderson. Are you suffering from back, hip, neck, or knee pain? Dr. John Petrick and the team at the Las Vegas Pain Relief Center are ready to help you move more freely and feel better. Want to get your golf swing back? Improve your tennis serve? Be able to catch that grounder that got between your legs. Visit LasVegasPainReliefCenter.com to take the first step toward a pain-free day. The Las Vegas Pain Relief Center, 702-948-2520. Don't settle for feeling good when you could feel great.
It's time for a Q&A. Remember, if you would like to send us a question, just email us to submissions@joefanshow.com or tweet us at Joe Fan Show. Clayton Hamilton here in Las Vegas, along with Matt Reed in Oakland, California, in studio, Stefan Filial, and ballpark Frank Harnish. Let's get to our first question, fellas. Reagan in Lake Las Vegas asks, who will sire the first Kentucky Derby winner, California Chrome or American Pharoah? Hashtag bloodlines.
Oh, a horse racing question off the bat. I love it. Well, if we're basing it on heart, I would say Chrome. But unfortunately, in the breeding shed, a lot of it has to do with bloodlines. And American Pharoah definitely has an advantage over Chrome with bloodlines. He's also been in the shed an extra year before Chrome, so I'll have to give it to Pharoah.
Darn it. I'm going with California Chrome with what he did. I just love the state of California. It's just a beautiful place. So I got to go with California Chrome.
I have to kind of agree with Matt. That extra year in the shed, that's a huge advantage because he'll have a crop of horses ready to come a year earlier. Bloodlines is a huge thing when you're looking at all the charts and everything. Although they pay millions of dollars, it's an inexact science, but if I had to put my money on one of them, I would go with Pharoah.
Yeah, I think the big book of math certainly goes with Pharoah, but one of the good things about Chrome's a whole lot cheaper than the Pharoah. It's $200,000 for Pharoah, it's $50,000 for Chrome. So maybe, just maybe, you get one of those good stories of a group of people that haven't done this too awful long, and they make that dream come true with a little cheaper horse. So I'm hoping that it's Chrome, but it's probably
going to
be
Disney movie.
Pharoah, yes, I do. Tamar in Las Vegas asks, which top 10 college basketball team that lost this week has the most to worry about? Hashtag March Sadness.
I think it's this Baylor team that, you know, we talked about last week. They gave Kansas a big game last week, but then they go home and lose to Kansas State. So they better be careful, because you start piling up losses this time of the year, you're going the wrong direction.
Man, what is the deal with that? Yeah, but I chose Louisville. I think they need to get their act together. They lost big to Virginia, even though they were down four players, two due to suspensions. You can't go into March doing that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, any one of them could lose because of the three-point shot in the game today, but I would probably tend to agree with Stefan that Louisville, I'm not sure how good they really are. So, I mean, I see a lot of flaws in their game plan. And when you see a team that gets blown out at this time of year, that is a huge concern.
Yeah, I'm not as worried about Louisville because every time they get blown out, it's just by Virginia. So if they can avoid Virginia, I mean, they've been blown out the last three times by them, they'll be okay. I'm with Matt on Baylor in that they had sort of the weakest schedule coming in, and they don't really have that player I feel like can take over a college game. So I'm a little bit more concerned with Baylor. Yeah, but Kansas State played Kansas tough as well, so they're no cupcake. David in Point Pleasant, New Jersey asks, who will be the next American man to win a Grand Slam tennis title? Hashtag struggling.
Struggling mightily. I personally would say he hasn't been born yet, but if I had to pick someone right now, I'm just going to pick Jack Sock because I love the name.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's going to take a long time, but I'm going with Sam Querrey. He's got a strong forehand, and I like his serve.
If there's a player of a name that's out there, if Isner could ever learn how to break serve, his serve is so good that he could do it. But I tend to agree with Matt in the sentence that he might be born, but I don't think we know who he is yet.
He has not been born, and that is because Serena Williams is not yet retired and had a baby. But when Serena Williams has herself a son, then I think that is our best chance. Yeah, the men's side, there's some guys coming up that I want to get excited about Ruben, Frank. Mm-hmm. I really do, but there's no way that guy's ever going to win a Grand Slam.
How old is Andre and Steffi's kid?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, Sam Querrey, Jack Sock. It's rough. It's rough, Frank. Although, hey, props to the men. They did beat Switzerland to go on to the quarterfinals of the Davis Cup coming up here in April. And we'll find out whether or not Tomic and Kyrgios are going to play for Australia.
And non-props to Canada for smashing the umpire in the face with a ball.
Yeah. Yeah, what happened to the polite Canadians? Unbelievable. You've been listening to the Joe Fan Show for Clayton Hamilton, Matt Reed, Stefan Filial, and Ballpark Frank of the Rink Rats Hockey Radio Show. You've been listening to the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio, 920 The Game. TC Martin, the doctor, is next.